West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento, ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader. Always live on the Odyssey app. It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Yeah, it sure as heck is. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil is riding with us, and we're hanging out with you until noon on this Wednesday, March 19th. We are sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Everybody on the radio, hello and good morning. Appreciate you. If you're listening on the radio, you got to get out of the car. Good news. You can listen on the free Odyssey app where we are streaming live all over the world. You can listen. So there's no excuse to miss a second of the show. And if maybe you can't listen live, download the James Hamm and Kyle Madsen Show. Subscribe to that wherever you get your podcast. It's a podcast version of this show. And of course, everybody watching on YouTube and Twitch and in the chatty house at youtube.com/ESPN1320, twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Last night, perfectly, it was the first night technically of March Madness, right? You had to play in games. I refuse to, like, I hate that those get called tournament games, the play-in ones.
Okay.
It doesn't, it's not the first round to me. It doesn't count. You're playing to get into the tournament. They call it the first four. Like, no. You're playing to get it. You're in a play-in situation. It's like if you make the play-in tournament in the NBA, you didn't make the playoffs. You made the play-in.
Okay, so with the NCAA, because of the way that you have to get in, where like mid-majors or, you know, like small schools have to go through this process to get into the tournament, you know, it doesn't matter how good your record is. It doesn't, you know, you can be 25-3 or whatever, but they kind of hold it against you because you haven't played anybody big. I kind of feel like it's a little different. I agree with you. It is still like a play-in type scenario.
Yeah, and you can be in the play-in. You just didn't make the tournament, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But anyways, I digress. Last night perfectly captured March Madness. Because you had the Alabama State-St. Francis game that ended on a full court baseline to the opposite key pass that somehow got deflected to an Alabama State player who laid it up with like 0.2 seconds remaining. And it was just chaos. The game was insane. They were knocking down threes and they were getting stops and then they're hitting big shots. It was amazing. It was like these two schools couldn't name a single player on either team. The Alabama State nor St. Francis were going to win. Alabama State's not going to win their 16-1 matchup.
Okay.
That's just, almost guarantee it. But it's like, man, that was a really fun basketball game. Now for the big one. UNC, San Diego State, can't wait for these two teams to match up. That game was over in 4 minutes.
Oh.
Just immediately UNC up 20.
That's crazy because...
And they go on to win 95-60.
San Diego State's had a good run last couple of years.
Yeah, they went to a national title game a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Like, and they just got boat raced. And this is why it's really hard for me to like, and I'm filling out brackets. I'm doing the whole thing we were talking about. Our guy Joe filled out his first bracket ever. Did you finish today?
I'm still working on it. And
okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just move on. But yeah.
let's move on.
I'm still working. I'm halfway done with it.
Okay.
So like I was working on it and I'm like, okay, cool. Oh, I'm only halfway
done.
It's
a lot of games.
Yeah.
It's a lot of games to pick.
Yeah.
I think he's overthinking it.
I might be.
No, totally. Because here's the thing. I'm going to keep it a stack. I don't know. I got people who text me because they're like, hey, you work in sports. Who's going to win?
Yeah.
There are people who watch college basketball for a living who have no idea.
Exactly.
Like, I'm going to go to various rankings and I'm just going to pick teams based on that.
I got Iowa State.
Love that. Know? That's great.
That's what we're going with.
And randomly pick an upset here and there.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. But I have a really hard time getting fully into the March Madness thing because I feel like I'm just every, I don't know. I'll be locked in on Thursday.
Yeah.
When it starts.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to be watching more now for sure.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to see how wrong I am.
But then it's like, man, I was really looking forward to UNC San Diego State, and I watched 20 minutes of it.
Yeah, just like, ugh. Yeah,
just not one. Great basketball.
I just watched the end of that Alabama State the St. Francis game. That's crazy,
ridiculous, sick pass, right?
Yeah, absolutely,
unbelievable play. Anyways, not the most important thing that happened in the basketball world last night, at least not here in Sacramento. We got an update on Domantas Sabonis' ankle. They called it a moderate ankle sprain. And he will be reevaluated in 10 days.
Yeah.
So that means he'll be, they're going to not do anything. I mean, he'll go through treatment and stuff, but they're not going to see where he's at in terms of his return to play timeline until 10 days from now.
Well,
and at that point, they'll take a look and
yeah,
figure out where he's at.
So moderate, I'm going to guess, as opposed to using the scale, the grade one, grade two, grade three.
Sure.
I'm just going to guess that a mild is a grade one, a moderate is a grade two, and a severe would be a grade three.
That makes sense.
So this can be anywhere from a week to 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. They're saying 10 days. 10 days is a bad thing because that puts you at the end of your homestand.
Mm-hmm.
And it also puts Domas in a really, really awkward situation when it comes to whether he makes the All-NBA team or not. And, mm-hmm. you know, he still has to make the team one way or another, but he is very, very close.
He's right up against it.
He is right up against it. So we did the sort of the calculations here. He's at 58 games, right?
Yeah, but go ahead.
But two of them don't count.
Right, because he did not play
15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So those two games don't count at all. So right now he's at 56 games, which means in order to hit the threshold of 65, he's got to play in 9 of the final 15 games. The Kings, you know, again, they have this homestand that they're on right now. They've got 6 games left on the homestand. The 10-day mark is literally the Blazers game.
The Thursday of the end of the homestand.
Yeah, so if he could play in that game, that would give him an opportunity to potentially play 66 games, plus the two that he didn't qualify for, but as far as, you know, qualifying for 66 games.
I got to tell you, when it comes to that, it's a pat on the back and sorry, pal. Like, you're not making it this year.
Yeah.
I'm not rushing him back to play the Blazers when he might, because we all know, we've seen players with ankle problems where you try and rush back and, hey, that one wrong step that was innocuous 2 weeks ago is now all of a sudden an injury that's going to sideline him for 2 or 3 more weeks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we saw De'Aaron Fox a couple of years ago. He had a grade 3.
Mm-hmm.
He rushed back, and I think he missed 20 games.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like the fastest recovery ever from a grade 3. I think it was 7 weeks. He wasn't right for almost 2 years because of that.
Man.
I mean, he could not get the swelling out of his ankle. He had all kinds of issues. Like, he developed plantar fasciitis for a couple of days, started mm-hmm. having foot issues. Rushing back from a major ankle sprain. Now, a grade 2 isn't nearly as bad as a grade 3. A grade 3 is basically the ligament snaps.
Right.
And it has to be, it has to reattach itself, which
it does
on its own.
Sorry for everybody with weak stomachs.
Yeah. a grade 2 is basically you've stretched the ligament to the point where you might have some fraying, but it's still like it's not a complete, like you didn't demolish it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not great.
So hopefully, so I mean, I'm punting on the all NBA stuff. If I'm the Kings, because any kind of run you're going to make is going to involve Domantas Sabonis probably pretty heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he's not back by the Trailblazers game, okay, yeah, let's throw him in there. Let's make sure he plays. Nah, I'm out. I'd rather him come back against, I don't know, Washington on April 2nd, so he misses the rest of March. And he's good to go. He's got his conditioning down. Ankle feels good. He's ready to return to play. Here we go.
No,
and that way you have him for this home stretch where you get Washington, Charlotte, Cleveland, Detroit, Denver, and then potentially huge games against the Clippers and the Suns to close the year at Golden 1 Center. That matters so much more to me than the 65-game threshold.
No, I agree with you, but I also, you know, at the end of the day, he also has a bonus attached to that, I believe, at $1.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's $1.3 million when you're making 40, but still, you're an NBA player, you're not gonna, you know, give up $800,000 or $900,000 after taxes just because.
Sure.
Or maybe $700,000 or $800,000.
But it's not just because. If you're reevaluating the guy in 10 days, that typically means, okay, gonna take a look in 10 days, and then we'll try and if the swelling's down, if the pain is down, whatever it is, then we'll set a return to play that involves, you know, getting back into practice, getting a little contact in. Okay, now he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting there going, oh man, his bonus, we have to get it. I'm sorry. You missed it this year. You got hurt a couple times. That's what happens.
No, I agree.
The team
does have to come over. It has to be more of an importance than an individual award or an individual bonus when you're making a ton of money already.
Yeah, man. It's I don't envision a version of this season for the Kings that ends in a playoff berth where Domas is dealing with this finicky ankle.
Mm.
It's just not even a question for me.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We're going to have to see what it looks like if he actually, you know, attempts to come back or not quicker, you know. But he's a player that hates to miss games. And, you know, he played an entire season with a broken bone and like an avulsion fracture in his thumb. Like, so if he can get out there and play, I expect him to at least try to get out there and play. And look, the way that he's a ground-based player, the way that he plays, you know, the physicality and stuff, I think it's okay for him to be on a bit of a bum wheel as opposed to like De'Aaron Fox being on a bad ankle because he, you know, then he can't push off the right way and, you know, it's going to hamper speed and quickness.
Yeah.
We'll see though.
I don't know. Overall, I think good news for the most part. Like he's missing a couple weeks, which is suboptimal, but that's so much better than we'll see if he can return for the play-in. That would have been devastating.
Yeah.
So, anyways. You brought something up that I would like to bring to the air, if that's okay. Because
yeah.
I've seen it. Well, we've seen it a couple of times in the chatty house. And then you just kind of see it, you know, scrolling the internet during games. You get a really interesting perspective on what people think about the Kings. And we've seen it in the chatty house. Why doesn't Jay Crowder play? I was talking to our guy, Kevin John, from ABC 10.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, man, Markelle Fultz is the missing piece. You've got to get Markelle Fultz out there.
Yeah.
No, they don't. Jay Crowder does not need to play. Markelle Fultz does not need to play.
Mm-mm.
This is not what's going to fix the Kings, everyone.
Well, this isn't Little League where everybody gets to play three innings.
Right.
Right? Like, first of all, this is the deepest roster the Kings have had in years when it comes to like NBA talent.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually hiding on the back end of the Kings roster a whole bunch of guys who cannot help you at all. Where this season, like when you're looking at your 10, 11, 12 guys, mm-hmm. when you have Doug McDermott hiding there, when you've got Jay Crowder, you've got, again, Markelle Fultz, like you have actual NBA talent hiding there,
mm-hmm.
which is new, like mm-hmm. really. And so for me, when I look at what's happening here, like Markelle Fultz flat out he lost his minutes to Devin Carter.
Yes. Like,
Devin Carter has outplayed Markelle Fultz.
But like by a lot.
Yeah. Like we talk about Markelle Fultz being a good defender on this long wingspan and stuff. And then you watch Devin Carter go out and pick up 4 steals in a game and was just tenacious, right? We've seen some bad shots from both of those players. But one of them is a veteran and one of them isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you expect bad shots from a rookie who's trying to figure out who he is in the league.
Right, one of them was your top 10 pick. The other one isn't.
Well, yeah. And it doesn't matter that he's a number one overall pick, but, you know, a former number one overall pick in Markelle Fultz.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter anymore. That's not who he is anymore. We just watched a game where the Memphis Grizzlies rolled into Sacramento. Marvin Bagley, the number 2 overall pick in the 2018 NBA draft, is, I believe, the only player on their roster who did not play. It doesn't matter where who you were coming into the league, like 6-7 years in, you got to figure out who you are now and make your way. The Jay Crowder thing is interesting. He's had back problems for most of the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's almost 35 years old. Like, he'll be 35 in July.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of playing out the string here, but I believe the Kings like him as a locker room influence.
Yeah, like player coach.
Yeah, and he's, you can see him. He's one of the first guys off the bench. Yep. He's giving everybody advice and
constantly talking
to him. Yeah, and you know, for me, you know, Doug Christie, he really spent, when he went to the Knicks as a player, he got Herb Williams took him under his wing and sat there on the bench and coached him during games. Like, are you seeing what you're, you know, what I'm seeing here? Mm-hmm. Doug wasn't getting to play at all, but yeah. he was being coached on the bench by a veteran. And I think that that's why you have guys like Jay Crowder. So he can sit there and get in Isaac Jones' ear. We also heard that, like, when he got cut, when he didn't make the team, he didn't get an invite to training camp. He had been around the team for a week or two, and him and Isaac Jones had exchanged numbers, and they were in communication the whole first half of the season while Jay wasn't on the team.
Yeah.
And that's just, that's who he is. He's being a good veteran leader, and the fact that he's not playing, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
You got Jake LaRavia. You got Keegan Murray. Yeah.
They're not a Jay Crowder away. They're not even a Markelle Fultz away. We know what Markelle Fultz is in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I would honestly rather see Devin Carter get those minutes.
At this point, yes.
Like, Devin Carter is a player who might play for you next year. Markelle Fultz, very likely not.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways. I just wanted to address that because I feel like it's come up a couple of times. And
yeah.
Wanted to touch on it. All right. Some wild NBA stuff from last night. We've got, did you know the Major League Baseball regular season started? Yeah, I wouldn't blame you if you didn't. Another screw-up from MLB. We'll talk about that. And the Kings, of course, have a big game tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers, who lost last night. And we'll talk about that next. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. It's ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader. Back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Yeah, I got to get out to Amador County and get some of the wineries up there.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I've been to Napa. Livermore is right over the hill for me, where I live out in the East Bay. Mm-hmm. So Livermore, really underrated wine country. If you're looking for something to do, I need to get out to Amador County because I've heard nothing but great things. Oh, I've been to Clarksburg as well. Obviously, shout out to Old Sugar Mill. But I've not been to Amador County.
I think you would like it. A lot of reds.
Big fan.
I know you, but also a lot of a little bit sweeter reds. I don't know. I've always had a good experience up there.
Nice.
It's good stuff.
We went to Santa Cruz. We went wine tasting in Santa Cruz one time, me and the family, and we went to one. It's called Madsen Winery, M-A-D-S-O-N.
Okay.
Spelled the same as my last name. So had to go, right? Very drinkable, like light reds, and that's what a lot of the grapes up in that area in the Santa Cruz Mountains are going to be a lot lighter than what you find in like Napa. And so it was okay. We go next door to this other winery, and every single one of their reds was just like a dark burgundy that just punched you in the mouth. It was great. That's my kind of wine. I want to be a little uncomfortable while drinking my wine.
Yeah, you like the Zins.
You give me an old vine Zin.
Yeah. There you go.
I got to get up to Amador County. Maybe we'll do that soon. Last night in the NBA, no Kings, but they did lose ground on the Clippers and the Warriors. The Clippers, they might be about that life, man. They beat the Cavs 132-119, and I have no idea what their ceiling is. They're probably a first-round exit. I would want no smoke with them if I was a 1 or 2 seed, or 3 seed.
It's funny because that's the one competitive game the Kings played over that stretch. You know, they lost in overtime. They probably should have won that game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where I think we've all learned, never trust the Clippers late in the season. Like, the Clippers have a knack for looking great and having a ton of talent, and then they get to a certain point and they just fall apart.
So I would typically agree with you because that's what we saw last year, right? Like, last year they were, you know, let me find that, because there was a point in the year where it was like, oh my God, the Clippers. They were 34-15, and from there went 17-16 the rest of the way. And that's exactly what you're talking about. They were 34-15. They were super mid to close the year, and then they lose in the first round in six. But this year feels different because there hasn't been, for me anyway, A, they've not really been healthy all year. They just got Kawhi Leonard back. How many games has Kawhi played?
Not enough to qualify.
No, not even close. Kawhi Leonard has played 26 games. But he was out. He came back. It's not like he's came back and then missed a bunch of time and then came back and missed a bunch of time. Like, he's just kind of back and he's easing his way in. And they were, this year, they were sitting at 32-29, and now they've won 7 out of 8. It feels more like they're playing their best basketball at the right time.
That's
and their
a good
parts
thing.
Are coming together at the right time.
Yeah.
More than, wow, look how good they are. Wait until this falls off the rails because everybody's going to get hurt. Like, they dealt with that already. It's why they're an 8 seed and not battling for like a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Is they've just not been healthy. But man, James Harden's having a really effective year. I love what they've done with Derek Jones and Amir Coffey. They found a nice role for Chris Dunn. Ivica Zubac is just a freaking monster now.
Mm-hmm.
They just have a really, really high quality group of players. And then you see them play the Cavs and kind of, I don't want to say dominate, but really controlled most of that game. Really impressive stuff from the Clips, man. I think they might be for real.
Okay. I need to see it in the playoffs. Again, I do like Zubats. I think Zubats is like very talented. He's getting better and better.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely spectacular to see you know, a guy who's figuring it out in the league. And just a massive human being. Like, that's a big dude.
He's listed at 7'2", 240. He plays bigger than that somehow.
Oh, I think he's much bigger than that. Like, I don't believe he's 240. I like their addition of Bogdan at the deadline. Mm-hmm. And I think he can really pay dividends down the road. The Derek Jones Jr. pickup, he, you know, for a guy who averages 10.5 points per game, every single time he plays at Kings, it feels like he's a 15 point per game guy.
He is like, who's a, I have a name that comes to mind, but I'm not going to say it because of the market I'm in. Derek Jones Jr. is one of those guys, when you look at his, you watch him play, the eye test doesn't match the numbers.
Yeah.
Every time you talk about playing the Kings, but even like, he's averaging 10.5 points and 3.5 boards this year. And he shoots 36.3% from three. I swear to God, I've never seen him miss a three.
Yeah, every single time he plays the Kings, it's just money.
And he's going to score 15 points. He's going to have a couple steals.
They leave him open in the corner.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's just a baller, man. Shout out to him for carving out a role.
Yeah, that and, you know, they gave Terrence Mann a bunch of money, and then all of a sudden it looked like that money was going down a well. I mean, he was averaging 6 points per game for them and just not really, I mean, he's very good defensively, but it was a lot of money for just 6 points a game. Mm-hmm. And it's what you're always worried about when you look at like, hey, how much are you going to have to pay Keon Ellis? And you love Keon Ellis when he's making $2.2 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
You might even love him at $9 or $10 million, but if all of a sudden, like the contract that the man is about to start, he's at 15.5 next year, 15.5 in 16, and you're talking about a 28-year-old who is looking more and more like his career trajectory is Robert Covington, where he starts to fall off pretty quick. That's not great, but they were able to move off of that contract and go get Bogdan, and again, a matching salary roughly for Bogdan, but you know, fewer years, and just a really heady player. So
That's another reason I really like the Clippers this year, is because when you look at their lineup, it's a lot of James Harden for sure, but Kawhi Leonard, he's played 26 games. He scored 33 points last night on 12 of 19 from the field and 5 of 6 from 3. Just very Kawhi-ish. 7 boards, 4 assists, 4 steals, only a couple turnovers. A really solid player still. Not peak what he was. Ivica Zubac, obviously doing his thing. We talked about that. Norman Powell was damn near an all-star this year. His role has been diminished some by Kawhi's return. But then you get Chris Dunn. But then you get Bogdan Bogdanovic. Can handle the ball and do stuff and just make the right plays. Nicholas Batum, he's playing 15 minutes-ish a night. He's just going to have the ball in his hands, make the right play. Even Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons is not a guy who's going to go score the basketball. But, like, man, if Ben Simmons in a playoff game has to run point for you, Like, hey, you know what? You feel okay about it.
Or if you run into a buzzsaw of a player, you know, whether it's, again, whether it's Shea or whether, you know, it just depends on who you're going to have to match up against.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have, like, the luxury of having a 6'10" rangy defender that can defend three positions. He might not be, you know, it might be a player that sits out way too much, which he is.
Mm-hmm.
He has, you know, whatever issues off the court and all that stuff. But when it really comes to just defending, he's still a great defender. And I would love to have that luxury hiding on your bench.
Yeah, 1,000%, man. And that's why I'm just buying them a little bit more than I have in years past. Because, like, if Bogdan all of a sudden has to start a game for you in the playoffs, or James Harden's really struggling and Kawhi Leonard's got a knee thing, it's like, hey, you have to turn over the keys to Bogey for 10 minutes? All right. Like, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, they have a lot of guys who I really trust in a playoff series.
Yeah, I totally, and the thing is that when you look at Harden, right, when Harden steps off the court, you need a player that isn't James Harden but plays like Harden, and mm-hmm. that's Bogdanovich. Like, he can manage a lot of things, but he just play style wise, he doesn't mind being like a heavy handed dribbler who, you know, facilitates and does all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a good match.
Yeah, for sure. The Kings also lost ground on the 6th seed last night. Are we just writing the 6th seed off?
Yeah, 6th seed's over.
Okay, 6th seed's over. But Golden State, 2 nights ago, lost to / kind of got smoked by the Denver Nuggets with no Nikola Jokic, no Jamal Murray, and no Christian Brown.
Mm-hmm.
All the Warriors played, except for Brandon Podziemski. Then they turn around last night on the second night of a back-to-back, no Steph Curry, and they beat the mostly full-strength Bucks. Still no Bobby Portis.
That's weird.
I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense.
Man, I forgot Bobby Portis is out.
Yeah, just out.
25-game suspension, right?
The Bucks, yeah, yeah, oof. So, the Bucks are just kind of the Bucks. Like, it's Giannis and Dame, and maybe you get some guys hitting threes. Maybe Torian Prince has a big game or something, but they're going to go as far as Giannis and Dame take them.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, right?
I don't know. I don't know how far that is. But I was watching the Warriors last night, and it was a really good example of what you and I talk about a lot with where the Kings' shortcomings are as a roster. Because the Kings right now have one pitch. And it is, hey, you're looking for Zach LaVine or Malik Monk or DeMar DeRozan or some combination of those three to get hot. And then every once in a while, somebody off the bench will knock down some shots, and you're hoping that it's enough to outscore the opponent. The Warriors last night just kind of turned that game into a rock fight because they didn't have Steph.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, like, with no Steph on the court, like, they don't, like, it's why the Kings' game plan is to get the ball out of his hands. And there was a stretch in the fourth quarter that just was really, really glaring to me. They went 3.5 minutes, Golden State did, without scoring in what was like a 5-point game. They go 3.5 minutes without scoring. They held the Bucks to 5 points in that 3.5 minutes.
Well, that's
like
good.
That ability to just go, hey, we don't have enough offense right now. We don't have enough floor spacers. Buddy Hield is in the closing lineup. Buddy Hield, GP2, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, and Moses Moody, I believe, was their closing five last night.
Wow.
But they did that because they just go, hey, all right, hey, we can't score super effectively tonight, so we're just going to make sure that you don't score. And they did that with just a combination of role players, just throwing guys out there. You get a couple of savvy veterans. Draymond Green was awesome defensively on Giannis individually, but that ability to just go, all right, hey, we can't score tonight, we're making it this style of game then. I don't feel like the Kings can do that right now with their current roster makeup. And that's kind of, and again, we talk about this a lot, but it was just a on-court example of like, oh, this is where I feel this is the next step for Sacramento, is finding different ways to win games that go beyond hope one of these guys gets hot for a stretch.
Yeah, the Kings are almost entirely based off of what they can do offensively.
That's it.
Like, if they're not good offensively, they don't have a shot at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we've seen it, like, play out again and again and again all the throughout the season. I mean, for a long time, it's like, hey, they're just getting outscored at the three-point line by a ton.
Yeah.
They closed the gap on that for a long period. It's opened back up here over the last 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, that three-game stretch where they were minus 108 at the three-point line was
tough.
Yeah,
we figured it was like 36 points per game difference. Yeah, just like absolutely horrific, right?
Yeah.
Well, they've figured out some of that stuff. Do they still give up too many threes? Of course, they still give up too many threes. But that's kind of modern NBA basketball anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they can ever be built like what we're seeing with the Warriors. And for that matter, this is not to disparage Mike Brown or Doug Christie, but I think Steve Kerr has done just an absolutely tremendous job.
It's been really good this year.
Like I told you early in the season, it was all smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he goes out and gets like a massive, you know, major franchise-changing piece in Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. And they just instantly click and are way better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not the way it works most of the time.
Not supposed to.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how much, you know, I don't know what the Lakers record is after the Luka Doncic trade. But I don't think it's nowhere near what we're seeing from the Warriors, you know? And again, you can say, well, LeBron's hurt and stuff like that. But like what that's done for their team to open it back up and to all of a sudden run away with the sixth seed out of nowhere, like really, really impressive coaching job by Steve Kerr all season. Yeah. And again, like smoke and mirrors, I called their team smoke and mirrors early in the season.
That's what it was.
It just means you're doing a hell of a coaching job though.
Yeah. If you're an NBA coach, on a regular basis, rolling out a 12-man lineup and being able to manage that?
Yeah, 12-man rotation, just boom, 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 boom. Like, yep.
Yeah.
That's really, really crazy. And what he did is he bought them wins early in the season,
yep.
Sort of like waited until they had an opportunity to make a big move. When they made the big move, now they're not so far in the hole that they can't climb out.
Yeah.
You know, they're right around 500 when they made the move, and now they're well over 500, and they're just kind of cruising.
Well, it's the opposite. It's the opposite of what the Kings ran into.
Yeah.
Where you drop some games early in the year where it's like, you kind of needed to get that one.
Yeah.
Whereas Golden State stole some wins early in the year. So they started 12-3. And when they finished, before the break, they had gone 12-3. And then they went 13-22.
Yeah, not great.
But again, they had that buffer. That got them to 500.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally right at 500 at 25-25. So when they went on a roll, like, oh, hey, look, now they're climbing the standings. Now they're in the 60s. Instead of, oh, shoot, we're three games below 500, four games below 500, we had to just fight and scrap and claw to get back to that. That's when we harp on losses early in the year.
Yeah.
This is kind of why.
Well, that, and the Kings started, you know, the five-game losing streak leading to Mike Brown getting fired, put them five games under 500.
Five games, jeez.
And then when they got to, when Doug lost the first game against the Lakers, they were six games under 500. They were able to claw all the way back out of that. So the fact that they're still a game over 500, that means that Doug is five games over 500 as a head coach. It's pretty impressive. Well, no, seven games over 500. It's pretty good.
This is a larger discussion than we have time for currently.
21 and 15.
I'm just in, bro. I've seen it. I've seen enough. Unless this crashes and burns real bad here, and they have 15 games left. If they go 5-10 over the next 15, and they're 39-43, and it's like, ooh, and they lose in the first play-in game, it's like, ooh. Okay, maybe we can reevaluate. But I don't think that's gonna happen. Because I have enough sample size that I think Doug Christie is probably pretty good at his job. And I think that Doug Christie would probably be better at his job, A, once he has an entire offseason to get his own coaching staff and to kind of rethink what the Kings are doing offensively and defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And two, if you get a new GM in who can identify some of the real roster weaknesses and address those properly, I think if you dropped Doug Christie onto the Clippers roster today, this is not to disparage Ty Lue. This is a Doug Christie thing, not a Ty Lue thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Clippers are probably still really freaking good.
Oh, I think so too. And look at his bench. Like, he's got Jeff Van Gundy on his bench.
Yeah.
Like, that, I mean, that is an NBA coaching staff right there. The Kings are down right now. They're down three assistants because Leandro Barbosa has been away from the team for a personal reason.
Man.
They're down three assistant coaches because you got Doug, then Luke Laux left.
Mm-hmm.
So when Doug got promoted, they didn't backfill his spot. So, and then Barbosa isn't with the team.
Jesus.
So you're looking at like, he's way down coaching staff wise. Mm-hmm. Maybe not what it used to be, like the good old days where it was like Jerry Reynolds and one assistant and then a trainer that helped out a little bit, like fetched balls and stuff. Yeah. Wild.
Crazy how much it's all changed. I have a Giannis question for you when we come back. And of course, we have to look ahead to the Kings game tonight against the Cavs. Big game tonight for the Kings. But Damian said something yesterday, too, that I thought was really interesting during the handoff. And I want to dive into that when we look ahead to Kings-Cavs tonight at Golden 1 Center. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil is behind the glass. We're back in a second here on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader.
You're going to be pissed.
Now, back to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hope everyone's having a good time filling out their brackets. Mm-hmm. Every year, I go, hey, I'm going to have a strategy this year. Sometimes I go, hey, just whatever team's better at shooting threes, I'm going to pick that team. And every once in a while, I'll be like, hey, whoever's better at defense. And if you're better at both of those things, then, hey, you're going to make a run for me. But then and sometimes I'm like, I'm going to do the KenPom rankings, and then I'm going to do ESPN Basketball Power Index. None of it matters. None of it ever matters.
Nope.
Eat Arby's. I don't know. Kings-Cavs tonight. Is it better for the Kings that the Cavs lost last night? They've now lost two in a row. Do you subscribe to the idea that, oh, hey, maybe they're scuffling a little bit? Or they're going to be pissed? And they're going to try and bounce back against the Kings on the second night of a back-to-back.
Well, I mean, like, look, if it was one loss and it was a bad loss, then I would say I don't like losing a bad loss, you know, having that sort of moment. The way the Cavs have rolled through their season, I mean, they're 56-12. I mean, again, the Kings are one game over 500. The Cavs are 44 games over 500.
That's absurd.
This team is so good, but when you've had a season like this and you lose a game and then you lose another game, sometimes it can snowball and become like a 3-4-5 game losing streak just to get you recentered. The other thing is they're in coast mode. At least they should be. Mm-hmm. And they're a young team who hasn't been here before, right? So there's a possibility that they're going to let go of the rope just a little bit here. Mm-hmm. And then get ready in the last couple of games of the season to kind of get ramped back up. But, you know, two games ago, the Cavs had won 16 in a row. Like, so again, it's one of those things. When you win 16 in a row, sometimes you sputter a little bit after that first loss. And, you know, they lost to the Magic. They lost to the Clippers. But they're on a five-game, you know, West Coast swing.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get past the Kings, they've got the Suns, the Jazz, and the Blazers. Like, this team is going to win 65 games without even trying because it's Spurs, Pistons, you know, Clippers. You know, they still have another game against the Kings and the Spurs. They've got another game against the Bulls. Like, this is a team that has the potential to win high 60s.
Which is absurd. 56 wins by itself. For the Cavs,
oh, yeah.
Would be the third highest total in Kings history. Just if the Cavs didn't win another game, and that's not to disparage anyone, 56 by itself is like, man,
oh, yeah.
What a hell of a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at 56 with 15 games left or whatever it is.
14 games left.
Man.
Well, that and, you know, we joke, they could still win 70. I mean, this team just won 16 in a row. There's nothing that says they can't win 14 in a row.
They have multiple 15-game win streaks this year.
It's wild.
It's insane.
Don't they have two 15s and a 12?
And a 12.
Yeah. It's
outrageous.
They are so incredibly good. And you think that they're a tough matchup for the Kings. For whatever reason, they haven't really beat up on the Kings the last couple of years.
Yeah, so. And maybe this year is different because they're playing. But I watched, if you watched Clippers and Cavs last night, and you watch Ivica Zubac just kind of be too big, which is weird because it's Evan Mobley and Jared Allen as their 4-5, just an insane defensive front court.
Yeah.
Just outrageous. And it just didn't matter.
He's just too big.
Yeah. And so you watch that and you go, okay, well, no Domas, but Valanciunas can kind of be a close enough facsimile to that, where okay, maybe you can just kind of bully them, and maybe that works. Maybe that's just why the Kings are the tough matchup for the Cavs.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'm really interested to see this year because the Cavs are just such a different team than they've been at any point in the last 2 years. And go ahead, sorry.
It's crazy. The Kings ran them. Oh, no. The Kings were run over by the Cavs last year in the second game, 136 to 110.
They beat them here, though, at Golden 1, right?
Yeah, the first game was a 132-120 win by the Kings.
Yeah.
And again, it was early in the season, so the Cavs really weren't who they were going to be. And the Kings had four guys score 20 points or more. So we'll have to wait and see what the Kings look like tonight.
Yeah.
And especially playing without Domas again.
The Cavs are a really interesting case study in like basketball discourse, because I think part of the reason when everybody tries to solve the NBA's quote unquote problems, right? I think part of it is ring culture, where nothing matters except for who wins the championship. And even then, if you didn't win the championship the way everybody thinks you should have won the championship, then does it really count? The Celtics were the best team in basketball all year last year.
They won by, what, 12 games?
By so many games.
Yeah, that's what they were up on the Bucks by.
And then they cruised through the postseason, and it was not, wow, look how dominant the Celtics are. It was like, eh, but everybody was hurt.
Yeah.
Instead of just celebrating. And I think the Cavs are running into the same thing. The Cavs are having this awesome year where, like you just laid out, there's a very real chance that they win in the mid to high 60s, which does not happen super often.
Nope.
It is really hard to win 64-plus games. 60-plus, really. And the discourse with the Cavs is, yeah, nice year, but, I mean, so what? They're not going to be Boston.
Well, that's what everyone thinks right now. They could be Boston.
I definitely think they could.
Yeah.
But that's just, the Cavs are doing this thing that's really hard to do. They're having this amazing year. And every basketball podcast I listen to, everything I read on the internet is like, this is cute and all, but so what? It's not going to matter. Like, all right, then what are we doing here? Then what's the point? What's the point of the 82-game regular season if nothing you do is going to matter? Golden State went 73-9. In the 2015-16 season, and they're frauds because they didn't win a game 7 in the last game of the year.
They lost the championship.
They lost the championship, so 73-9 doesn't count. Like, man, that's fine. Like, that's again, that's what the culture of the sport is. Mm-hmm. But it's like, that's the problem, is the Cavs are rolling in here at 56-12. They have played 68 games and won 56 of them.
That's so wild.
And we're going, meh. Like, can they do it in the playoffs?
Well, here's crazy. They lead the league in three-point percentage at 38.7.
Good Lord.
They lead the league in two-point percentage at 58.1. Here's an anomaly, though, Kyle.
Okay.
They're number two in overall field goal percentage, despite leading the league in both three-point percentage and two-point percentage, because I'm guessing that they've shot so many threes that it's impacted their overall field goal percentage to drop it down below. But this team scores 122.5 points per game. Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me. This math is hurting my brain. So hang on, stop. Forget the basketball analysis for a second. I want to talk math. How are you the best three-point shooting team? There's nobody who shoots threes better than you.
Yep.
There's nobody that makes two-pointers at a higher rate than you do. Mm-hmm. That means the two types of shots you can take, two-pointers and three-pointers.
Yep.
Nobody shoots either of those things better than you do.
Okay.
But there's a team in the association with a better field goal percentage than you?
Well, I'm going to guess that the team is a high 2-point field goal percentage team who takes way more 2-point field goal percentage, two-point shots than threes. So the 2-point, you know, again, they're shooting 58.1 from two, and they're shooting 38.7 from three. So that 38.7 drags down your overall. The more threes you shoot, the more your overall percentage goes down.
It's the Nuggets at 50.6%. They make 38.2% of their threes, but it's 32 attempts a game versus 41 for the Cavs.
Okay, so wait, what are they shooting?
The Nuggets are 50.6% from the field.
So it's not even close.
57.4% from two, but they shoot 58 twos a game compared to 49 for the Cavs.
That's the difference right there.
I see.
Yeah, because the Cavs are shooting just 49.2. I mean, just 49.2. 49.2%, but they're like a full percentage point plus behind the Nuggets. That's wild, an overall field goal percentage.
Man.
Yeah, this is just a really efficient offense. They're
awesome defensively.
Yeah, they're long, they're athletic. You know, they've got wild scoring capabilities at the guard position. They went out and made a really interesting move at the deadline that's paid off big time when they got DeAndre Hunter, who, you know, for whatever DeAndre Hunter is, he hasn't been able to stay healthy throughout his career. But now here he is shooting 48.6% from three for you.
He is so good in that role for the Cavs. He's averaging 14.3 points per game, which is his lowest total since 21-22. That's what he's averaging with the Cavs. You mentioned the three-point percentage on 4.8 attempts a game, so decent volume.
Mm-hmm.
And he has an effective field goal percentage of 62.8. He's just four boards and assist.
Yeah.
Like they dropped this really good player who was probably miscast in Atlanta and went, hey, your numbers are going to go down, but you're going to be a way more effective player in this role for us.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they got rid of like George Niang to do it. Like that's a heck of a way to upgrade, man.
They didn't want to pay, Atlanta didn't want to pay his salary moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Cavs said, bet, our bench just got a lot better.
I'd go over there and see if they want to get rid of Isaac Okoro. That's where I'm at. Under contract for 11 and 11.8 next 2 years.
If they want to, that's, dude, and we can talk about that next. He's James, I'm Kyle, Joe Brazil. We have a plan for the Kings this offseason, and we'll continue diving into their matchup with the Cavs tonight. He's James. Did I say everybody's name? All right, Joe, hit the button.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.